2007. It's great to see all the people here. And we will, at the beginning, open a public hearing on Senate Bill 490A. We'll have a short description by our administrator, and then Senator Walker, I think, is here. We'll
Mr. Chair, I'll bring everybody up.
Okay, same time.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 490A directs the State Fish and Wildlife Commission to adopt rules prohibiting the use of the Internet to remotely control a weapon for the purpose of hunting any game bird, wildlife, game mammal, or other mammal. There's no fiscal or revenue impact.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Vicki Walker, State Senator, District 7. And I just would really like to get this bill moving, because I noticed that when I had it drafted, I didn't get the relating clause very narrow, and it's pretty broad related to hunting, which has been the problem for this bill for a long, long while, because everybody tries to do something with it. No one agrees that we should be shooting animals from our desktop. That's not sport, but it always got caught up in the cougar and bear bill, and so hopefully we can get this punched out today. This bill would ban cyber hunting. It was only done in Texas. It's never been done here, and I had a conversation with the department because they still need to have the flexibility to use closed-circuit television to throw a net on an animal by remote control or some such manner like that. I indicated to the department that if they were going to be shooting animals from their desktop, I would hunt them down, and Mr. Elliker said he would turn himself in rather than wait for me to hunt him down. So the department is not, that's not why they need the flexibility to use the Internet and closed circuit television, and I'll let him share that with you. But mostly I just want to make sure that we adopt these rules to, and this passed this law. The commission has indicated they were going to be doing this in June, but they indicated they were going to be doing it last year, and they never did it, so we'll just do it for them if you're all so inclined. I'm not opposed to hunting, Mr. Chair. I would state that for the record. I don't hunt myself, and I understand people do, but I don't call this sport hunting. This is unnecessary and illogical and unacceptable. So, thank you.
Thank you. We'll hear from everybody first, then we'll ask questions.
Chair Roblin and committee members, my name is Kelly Peterson. I'm with the Humane Society of the United States, and we're here just to also support Senate Bill 490. And I know on the Senate side, it's probably one of the first times it was also Safari Club was up testifying as well, because I know that they had a large hand in introducing this bill last session. So we're grateful for Senator Walker for reintroducing it. And there's not a lot more to add. It's just that I think in 2005 and 2006, there were 25 states that enacted bans on Internet hunting, and there's another, I think, 9 states in 2007 considering banning Internet hunting. And really, when I still remember where I was when I saw this gentleman in Texas who was offering this. I was sitting in Michigan in a little hotel, and it was on the Today Show. And I probably shared, like everyone else, it was kind of stomach turning. And I appreciate being here today in support of the bill, and hope it passes out. So thank you.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Roy Elliker, Deputy Director for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. We've worked closely with Senator Walker on this bill. It's a good bill. We support it.
Questions for the people? Yes, Representative McPherson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the change, I think, from current law is that what was authorized to happen is now required to happen. That is the creation of the rules that ban this practice. I'll look for assent on that. I see nodding heads. So have those rules been adopted, or are they waiting for this to happen?
Chair Roblin, Representative McPherson, the rules are on the commission's agenda to be adopted in June, and so there was some discussion of them adopting it in the interim after last session. However, we don't have any good excuse why that did not happen. We had 3 different directors in the interim between then and now, so somehow did not get on the commission agenda in the interim, but they are on the agenda for the June commission meeting here. But you need to say that the bill's here, and so there we go.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I'll just make a comment, having been one of those people who helped last session for the demise of this bill, and I feel bad about that, because I really did believe this should happen last year. I just also felt that we should have some tools to deal with cougars and bears. But we've taken care of that today, so I feel really comfortable, and I don't know anybody here that needs the hunting anymore. So,
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that. I appreciate you fessing up to it. We have to do things sometimes, I've taken a few of those myself. Taken one for the team, but I will be pleased if we can pass this bill. When I was out campaigning this last election, I door knocked on a young woman who said, "Have you ever heard of internet hunting? And does Oregon allow it?" And I said, "Funny you should ask." So I told her the little story about it, and I've made a commitment to her that I would reintroduce the bill, and here we are, and we've made it halfway now. So I hope to bring it home for her.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to speak? No one else has signed up on this bill. Okay, seeing no one, we will close our public hearing on House Bill 490A, and we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 490A.
Mr. Chair, I'll move Senate Bill 490A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Smith has moved Senate Bill 490A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none, we'll take a roll call vote.
Representative Boquist.
Excused.
Representative Clem.
Aye.
Representative Dingfelder.
Excused.
Representative McPherson.
Aye.
Representative Maurer.
Excused.
Representative Smith.
Aye.
Chair Roble.
Aye. Bill passes and moves forward. Thank you very much.
You want me to carry it?
That's a good idea.
Great.
Yes. We'll have Patty Smith carry that car.
Thank you.
Thanks for asking. We will now open a public hearing on Senate Bill 569A.
Must have been 559. I was like, what a huge bill for just sturgeon.
All right. We'll get a short explanation. Yes.
Mr. Chair, members, Senate Bill 569A eliminates the current restriction on the issuance of sturgeon propagation permits for only educational and scientific purposes, directs the Fish and Wildlife Commission to adopt rules related to the permits and sets an annual fee. There is a no revenue impact, a minimal fiscal impact, and no subsequent referral.
Thank you very much. And we already have Roy and Harry.
Mr. John Thorpe.
Oh, Jack Thorpe, okay.
Today.
And Representative Cowan, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
So with that, we'll let you proceed.
Thank you, Chair Roblin, and members of the committee. I appreciate you working me in here quickly. For the record, I'm Jean Cowan, representing from House District 10. And I don't have the bill number right in front of me. I know this is Harry Noah's sturgeon bill.
There you go.
And so I don't really need the
right
number, I don't think. I think you can get that into the record. I'm just here to ask you to please very carefully take a look at this bill, and I ask for your support. I've been out to the site where Mr. Noah would like to start an sturgeon aquaculture program. I think it's a great project. It's really an interesting one for our community. And the uniqueness of this site is that's what it's already designed to do. And it's sitting there unused at this time, but it's perfectly structured, all of these big, long concrete runs and that sort of thing for raising fish that will work beautifully with this project. Completely self-contained. There won't be any little fishies moving into the ocean where we don't want them. I think he's got a really creative and innovative idea for this and just needs a little help from the legislature to let it move forward. So I'm here to simply put in my comments on it and to encourage you to listen very carefully to Mr. Noah and the others about this project. So thank you for taking the time to hear me. And if you'll excuse me, I have to get back here.
Okay.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, for the record again, my name is Roy Elker, Deputy Director for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. On my left, Mr. John Thorpe, our Propagation Program Manager from our Salem Headquarters Office. And we have some prepared statements on 569. I'll kind of paraphrase quickly. I know the committee is looking to keep this a short session today. Also, as attached, I have a 3 or 4 page white sturgeon stock status to just give some background to the committee on white sturgeon stocks in particularly Columbia River. In Oregon in particular, we have one of the greatest sturgeon fisheries in the world, if not just in North America. That's becoming more and more important all the time with the loss of habitat to the Russian sturgeon and particularly the huge poaching problems they have in Russia on sturgeon on that fishery. But anyway, Senate Bill 569, for which I want to say we work closely with Senator Verger, Representative Cowan, and other coastal representatives, particularly from the Newport area, that eliminates the current restrictions on the commission issuing sturgeon commercial sturgeon propagation permits. It directs the commission to adopt rules relating to the permits, sets an annual fee for the permit, allowing commercial propagation, and restricts the use of wild brood stock for commercial aquaculture. A little bit about the history of this. Back in the early 80s, because of some real publicity and problems surrounding some large-scale Columbia River poaching of oversized sturgeon, pretty much the legislature shut down any commercial aquaculture for sturgeon in the early 80s, and that's really what this bill is meant to address today. We've come close over the last couple of sessions to coming up with a scheme to allow commercial sturgeon aquaculture in the state. It is a successful aquaculture industry in both Idaho and California. And so there's been, as over time, and as people have started to see what could be done with sturgeon aquaculture in a controlled way, folks here more and more in Oregon wanted to try their hand at it. Mr. Harry Noah is here today and will testify about his proposal, what he's working on right now on the coast at the old or aqua facility. But anyway, we believe with some tight controls, and particularly as rules from the commission, that there is room for commercial aquaculture for white sturgeon in Oregon. And working closely with Senator Verger, again, that's why the department helped work with her to bring this bill forward. It changes fundamentally our policy on propagating sturgeon. It allows for commercial aquaculture. It limits and ultimately eliminates the collection use of eggs taken from wild green or white sturgeon broodstock in the commercial fishery. It also charges a $3,000 annual fee for a permit needed for the quarterly fish health examinations. And this was a problem last session, why the bill did not get in the end. We worked hard with Senator Beyer last session on this bill, but in the end it was very difficult to overcome the cost because putting sturgeon in the hatcheries, there is some specific disease issues, and so we need to come up with a way to help pay for the time and energy it would take by the department to work with these entrepreneurs on sturgeon. And so we came up with a rather hefty annual fee, but we think in the end it does meet the need and provides the folks who want to get into this business the kind of help they need to get going, especially on the fish disease side. So I just, again, we have a sturgeon handout also attached for your information. Mr. Thorpe is here to help answer any questions you may have, specifically on sturgeon or sturgeon propagation. He spent a lot of time working on the details of this bill with Harry Noah. And with that, end my prepared testimony, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Any questions for these people? Representative Dingfelder.
Thank you. Thank you for bringing this forward. Right, just at $3,000, how did you come up with that permit fee?
I can answer that. Chair Roblin, Representative Dingfelder. What we did is we looked at our desire to monitor fish health and hatcheries. We do it normally, monitoring each hatchery we have in the state monthly, and this was a bi-monthly monitoring cost. It's a cost of about, I think it's a fourth of an OPE. It's partially funding one microbiologist to examine these things through the year. It's a minor piece, but without that, we just once again take it out of our own programs. And we wanted to be able to apply not spare time monitoring, but actually full time professional fish health monitoring of this program if we got it started.
So, follow up?
Yes.
So this will fully cover the costs of implementing the program. This fee.
Chair Roblin, Representative Dinkler. Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. And one final question is, how many applications do you anticipate getting?
Chair Roebling, Representative Dingfeld, it's difficult to ascertain exactly how many applications we expect. Mr. Noah here will probably testify a little bit. He is probably one of our leading folks to get one. We expect several other folks to have shown interest and come forward with applications. At this point, until we finish the rulemaking, it's difficult to see how that's going. But I know down in California and Idaho, and particularly with the constant kind of discussion about loss, about caviar profits from sturgeon aquaculture and about the fish sale of fish meat profits, you're just hearing more and more about that in aquaculture circles now, about sturgeon being the kind of something you really start to make money on. So I think the more that occurs over time, the more applicants we're going to be getting here.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you very much. So next we'll have Harry Noah and Martin Kellery.
My name is Harry Noah, and I'm the owner of Yaquina Bay Fruit Processors. We're here to speak in favor of the bill. This represents an opportunity for us to diversify our existing business that we have in Newport. About 4 years ago, we leased one of the old Oraqua facilities for something that'll sound crazy to you because we're talking about sturgeon, but for cherry processing. We're going to do about 3 million pounds this year of cherries in Newport for a lot of good reasons. But we have an intact aquaculture facility that we'd like to utilize. And we've looked around for a number of species that would work well for a situation like that. And when you start looking at the realm of potential aquaculture critters that you might grow, that A, you're not going to get in a big fight with the fishermen over, B, that are commercially viable, and C, grow in an estuarine situation, the list narrows pretty rapidly. And we finally came upon white sturgeon. They're an estuarine fish. They represent a boneless, a really firm boneless white meat that's commercially viable, and it's not something that we're going to hopefully ever get into any kind of a conflict with the fishermen. We'd like to put, if our plans work, and that's a big if, and we have a lot of research to do and a lot of work left to do, but we'd like to put the remaining Oraqua facilities back into production. There's one in Newport that we're at right now. We've been working with the Port of Coos Bay for the one on the north spit of Coos Bay, which has been essentially abandoned, but it's just sitting there. And we've got a lot of things to work out in regards to growing these fish in saltwater. They're saltwater fish that come to freshwater to spawn and then go back. So there's a lot of research to do, and we're sort of, that's ongoing right now. But we think there's a nice opportunity. And if it all works out, and that's an if, it represents about 30 jobs for the Oregon coast economy, which isn't a huge thing, but it's 30 jobs. So we hope you'll consider this bill in terms of passing it. So thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Roebling, members of the committee, my name is Martin Callery. I'm Director of Communications and Freight Mobility for the Oregon International Port of Coos Bay. We support, on behalf of the Port Commission and senior management, I can tell you we support this this bill. We think it presents a unique opportunity for our aquaculture facility, which, as Mr. Noah has said, it's somewhat abandoned at this point. We have maintained the pumps. We've tried to keep it up, but we haven't had a lot of takers over the last couple of years as we've tried to market it. I'm not sure it could be used for maraschino cherries, but I think it could well be used for sturgeon. We believe the restrictions in the bill help safeguard Oregon's resource in white sturgeon, and we support the bill. We'd like to see it move forward. We would like to see the jobs come to our community, and we'd like to see a facility put back into use.
Questions? I just want to make a comment, and I'll do this also for Senator Verger. There are a few people, from my perspective in this business, who have been as diligent doing all the right things, as Harry Noah. So I just want to comment to you in checking out facilities and doing the research and working with the department all the way along, not getting frustrated by the process. So I commend you for that. I appreciate the early meetings a long time ago when you were going on this, and I know that Senator Verger, who couldn't be here because she's in another meeting, is wanted to make sure that I recognized how important it wouldn't be here if it weren't for your diligence on this thing. And I think it's something that's important for the state with respect to this aquaculture. And I do not think that we would have gotten there had you not put in the efforts that you have done to this point. So thank you.
Thank you.
And it's a great thing for the Coos Bay area, because I, for those people who don't know, when we did have some aquaculture there, it was certainly great for the sports fishing in the bay. When those fish came back, it was pretty exciting, but that did not work out over time. And we have this facility sitting there, which could be put to great use. So, thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have one other person who signed up. Joe and...
Joe Rollers.
Ah, there we go. Thank you.
Nobody can pronounce my last name or read my writing. I apologize for that.
I appreciate that.
Mr. Arthritis is fault, not mine. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Joe Rollater. I represent Desert Springs Trout Farm, which is a large freshwater aquaculture facility in eastern Oregon located at Summer Lake. We specialize in large live trout. We restock our trout into ponds all over the West, from San Francisco, L.A., Nevada, Utah, Idaho. And as previous testifiers have said, this sturgeon propagation will help diversify the business at the aquaculture facility. We foresee it mostly as a fresh meat market rather than as a restocking market. But we certainly do support this bill, and we appreciate the time to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Okay. Anyone else who did not sign up who would like to speak to this bill? Seeing none, we will close our hearing on Senate Bill 596A, and we'll
open
569A. Thank you. And we will open a work session on Senate Bill 569A. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move Senate Bill 569A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Smith moves Senate Bill 569A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? I was listening to the discussion down here. Sturgeon is a very good...
Tasty.
It is tasty.
It is a very good...
I was curious about those cherries, too, but I decided not to get into that.
Okay. Any other discussion? Seeing none, we'll have a roll call vote.
Representative
Flynn. Aye. Representative Dinkel. Aye. Representative McPherson.
Aye.
Representative Maurer.
Excuse. Representative Smith.
Aye.
Representative
Gilchrist.
Excuse. Chair
Rubin.
Aye.
The
bill passes, and we'll move to the floor. Thank you very much.
I think you should carry it.
I will carry this bill. And Representative Cowan can help. That would be good. Thanks. We will now close that work session on Senate Bill 569A, and we're going to go a little out of order. So the next one we're going to do is we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 892A. So with that, I'll give you a short explanation, and then we'll call some people.
Mr. Chair, members, Senate Bill 892A directs the State Fish and Wildlife Commission to establish by rule a youth hunter mentoring program. There is a statement, fiscal statement attached to your staff measure summary, no revenue impact, and no subsequent review. Okay.
With that, let's have Roy Elliker. Who else is on there with Roy? Oh, Roger. And Ron Harder, you can come on up too, I guess, and have the whole group up here. Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Ron Harder with the National Rifle Association. Senate Bill 892 has been before you before in the form of House Bill 3165. It's a hunter mentor bill, a youth mentor bill. We think it's a great bill, and I'm going to condense my testimony somewhat today because we have heard it previously. Some of the outstanding things about this bill, one of them not quite so outstanding, is Oregon is 48th out of 50 states in hunter recruitment for young people. One of the things that Fish and Wildlife, one of the biggest problems they face is recruitment into the hunting population of any number of hunters of any age group. We think that this bill will encourage young folks to get into hunting earlier and therefore be retained. The bill sets, very simply, says that a youth between the ages of 9 and 14 can hunt with a mentor. There would be one firearm between the two they would share, and they would also share the mentor's tag. The youth would not be hunting by himself. If the opportunity to take an animal came about, then the tag that was purchased by the mentor would be used. 12 other states have already put this into effect. 5 states reported that 34,000 new people were brought into hunting without a single firearm-related action. This is a very safe program. These youngsters are better supervised. They are more careful. They are the safest hunters in the country. One of the things that we think it does, it gives young folks the opportunity to do something besides TV and play computer games and whatever else they do when they're 9 to 14. The 9 to 14 took place because at 14 we wanted them to have to go into a hunter education program. This does not replace the hunter education program. This is a great bill. I think it would encourage bonding between families, between fathers and sons and daughters, mothers, sons and daughters. I know one of the greatest things in my life was when one of my cousins took me hunting and I was able to take an animal for the very first time. And I was age 12 at that time. And that was one of the people in my life that I will never forget. So I think this is a great thing to bond families. It's not about guns. It's about bonding. It's about wildlife experiences. It's about outdoor experiences. And in closing, this passed the Senate on a vote of 28 to nothing. So I thank you very much for entertaining us here today.
Thank you. Chair Roblin, members of the committee, on my right, Mr. Roger Furman, the administrator for the Information Education section, who would administer this mentor program. Not much to add after the remarks of Rod on behalf of the NRA. The department is, would like to publicly thank the NRA and the Oregon Hunter Association for working with us on this bill. Other states are doing this now. The department has been concerned for a number of years over recruitment. About 2 years ago, we put together kind of a public advisory group who looked at a whole number of issues and options for the department on this issue. One of their top issues and one of their top recommendations was to have Oregon move into a mentor hunt program a little bit. And there's a number of states doing it now. And that in the back of your and the testimony shows the 12 states that have already gone into a program like this. There's also 5 similar states considering similar legislation. So I know you've heard a very similar bill before. So with that, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and the department, again, thanks, folks, for bringing this bill forward. Be pleased to implement this bill just as soon as we can, as soon as this passes through this chamber.
Okay. Any questions for this panel?
I have a question.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to ask any one of you can answer this. Of the 12 states that have already done this legislation, is there an age requirement? Is it 9 there?
Do you want to answer? There's different ages. Go ahead.
Chair Roblin, Representative Smith, for the record, my name is Roger Furman, the Information and Education Division Administrator. Of the 12 states, there's a variety of different rules in place and different ages, so it's across the board. The 9 to 14 is the age that seemed appropriate here in Oregon.
I'll do a follow-up. What's the youngest age of other states?
You know. Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Representative Smith, there's some states that actually have no bottom number. In other words, it's 7 or 8 or whatever the parent and the person thinks is appropriate to be mentoring. So 9 we selected because we didn't want to have no number at the bottom, but I know there are other states that have had actually, I think it's 7 or 8 or whatever. So we thought 9 was appropriate for where we're at with our Hunter Education Program, and we did have quite a bit of discussion on that as we worked through the bill before we got going. So 9 is where we ended up, Representative Smith, and we think that's appropriate for here. I agree with Roger.
Thank you very much. Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you. I see Senator Beyer is here, and yes, come on up. And Al Elkins.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Roger Beyer, State Senator, District 9. I present to you Senate Bill 892, which, as you've already heard, passed the Senate on a unanimous vote here a few weeks back. Appreciate you holding the hearing on this bill. I'd just like to speak in behalf of it. There's not much I can add to what has already been said. Just that we added an emergency clause to this bill in the Senate. And I don't know, wasn't here for all of Mr. Harder's testimony, but in case he didn't mention it, that was probably somewhat of a selfish emergency clause. I have an 11-year-old son, and would very much like to be able to have him participate in this program this fall if we can get this bill through the process and through administrative rules. So would encourage you to move the bill forward, get it to the floor, get it to the governor, get it signed, let the department get some rules written. And hopefully kids will have a good time. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Al Elkins, representing the Oregon Hunters Association. I can't say anything else other than we support 892 and ask for your yes vote today.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Seeing none. Thank you very much. We're going to close our public hearing on Senate Bill 892, and we're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 892. We may take a recess for a second. One of our other members wants to get here, and we just sent out to get him, so he should be here. We can do that. Let's also open a work session on Senate Bill 490. Which is the Internet Hunting Bill.
And is that the vote?
Yes.
Oh, Mr. Chair, I'd make a motion that we suspend the rules and let Representative Dingfelder vote on the Senate Bill 490.
Okay.
We should probably now vote on this, too.
We should.
So right now we'll do that one first. We have a motion to suspend the rules to allow Representative Dingfelder to vote on Senate Bill 490. Any objections? Seeing none, Representative Dingfelder, how would you vote?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I vote aye.
Representative Dingfelder votes aye.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion also to suspend the rules and allow Representative Maurer to vote on this bill.
Okay. Representative Smith has made a motion to suspend the rules to allow Representative Maurer to vote on Senate Bill 490A, which is the Internet Hunting Bill. Is there any objection? Seeing none, Representative Maurer, how do you vote?
Aye.
Okay, thank you. He has one more if you'd like him to. Does he want to vote? May have any minutes?
569. You got to close the work session.
We'll close the work session on 490 and open a work session on 569.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion that we suspend the rules on Senate Bill 569A and allow Representative Maurer to make a vote on that.
Is there any objection to the motion by Senator Representative? I almost made sense.
Okay.
Smith to suspend the rules.
I got a promotion.
Seeing none, Representative Maurer, how do you vote on Senate Bill 569A?
Aye.
Thank you very much. We'll close the work session on 569A. We already opened our work session on Senate Bill 892A, which happens to do with the age of hunting with a partner. The mentoring bill. We had heard it before. So I will take a motion.
Do you want to make the motion?
Want to make the motion?
Oh, sure. Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 892A be approved with a due pass recommendation to the Senate to the House floor.
Representative Clem has moved that House Senate Bill 892A be moved to the House floor with a do pass recommendation.
Yeah, you don't make a motion that you approve it, do you?
No.
You make a motion that I was trying to hedge my bets a little bit here.
So, any further discussion?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to just discuss. I'll give you a courtesy vote today. I have a real problem with the nine-year-old limit, but I've got to think about that. But I will vote yes.
Any other discussion?
Well, I'd like to maybe explore that a little bit further, because I have no frame of reference other than the testimony we got here about that age. So, is there, I was hearing that there are some states that have no lower lower end on their age, and I'm sort of just taking it on maybe faith to some degree from the input we got that age 9 is appropriate. Is there any further thought about that?
I would say from my perspective that I really haven't hunted a lot. I believe in hunting. I have a lot of brothers and sisters that have done a lot more than I. Got involved in other things and didn't choose this realm. Having had brothers go out and hunt, and having been on groups when I was very young with family hunting, I wasn't carrying a gun and I wasn't shooting when I was really young, but I was a part of the culture of it, and I think that's an important kind of thing from my perspective and watching what's happening. It also goes to how you handle weapons and how safe you are with them, and the situations that I was in, that was really stressed a lot, and that's why I think mentoring bills are a good aspect of that. I think that from my perspective, parents know their kids best. I think it could be younger for some kids. I think it could be older for others. And my issue is I think 9 is a good place to settle with. And it still is up to parents to make a decision if they're going to do it with their kids at 9 or 10. And I think they know better their kids personally with respect to whether they're ready or not. And sometimes I will tell you in our families, sometimes the young women would be more mature and be able to handle it at 9 than would be the young boy because of the attitude towards a firearm. But I think it's something that parents can do, and I think this age is one of those where it becomes very appropriate. That's just my opinion. And apparently, the opinion of many of the senators.
Yeah, man. I mean, I would tend to agree. I have been hunting, or at least traipsing around following my dad from probably, I know an earlier age than that, but I didn't have a gun, obviously. And, so that would have been, because I started school early, so that would have been like a fourth grade, essentially. And it wasn't too much longer after that I started getting into hunter safety and other things. I mean, it was a few years later, obviously, but it wasn't that much longer after that. And the bill, I think if I remember the House version of it, right,
exactly.
One gun between the two people. So that's part of what I think makes it better is, it might be,
and permit.
And I remember we'd go out mushroom hunting, and this was after I was of age and taking my class, and we'd go out mushroom hunting, and just in case you saw grass or something, I'd take a little 410 with me. And if I had been able to do it younger, but then my dad didn't have a gun, I think that would have been completely fine. And, I'm sure I was not the most mature, fourth grader, just like I'm not the most mature 34-year-old state legislator.
You weren't going to comment on that.
That's a parental
wasn't
decision.
Wasn't he your principal?
He knows.
I wasn't going to make any comment on that.
He knows so well. So I really do feel like the parents do know their kids best, but I think that's about the right age group for probably the average person.
What about taking your dog hunting?
He does go hunting. He just can't go into restaurants.
What struck me, too, was the fact that there was no access.
They're videotaping me, too, for this DHS training video.
In our previous testimony on the bill, it was very similar to this. They did make a comment that in the states where they do have it, there really have not been any accidents with people. So I think it covers it pretty
closely. It's just another thing.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair, I will support the bill. I grew up in a hunting household and have very fond memories of bird hunting when I was young, and I can't remember at what age I started carrying the shotgun around myself, and with actually complete futility in terms of hitting anything. But I do remember very fondly that experience.
Okay. Any other discussion? Seeing none, we will have a roll call vote.
Representative Dinkfelder.
Aye.
Representative McPherson?
Aye.
Representative Mauer?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Vogel? Excuse. Representative Plant?
Aye.
Chair Robles?
Aye. Motion passes. Thank you very much. And we will close our...
Carrier.
Oh, Carrier.
Yeah. Look at me.
I don't mind Carrier. You want to do it? Yeah. Okay. Well, let Representative
Clem... stories on the House floor.
Well, let Representative Clem Carrier do that as well, but thank you very much. We will close our work session on Senate Bill 892A. So, with that, we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 804. And before we go that, we'll have a short explanation. And I think where we're doing that, we can have Roy Elliker and Ron Anglin come on up and be ready. And we'll have a short explanation.
Mr. Chair, members, Senate Bill 804 would authorize the Fish and Wildlife Commission to adopt rules to define wild birds and wild mammals for the purposes of the wildlife laws. No revenue impact, no fiscal impact, and no subsequent review.
Good afternoon once again, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Roy Elliker, Deputy Director for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. On my right, Mr. Ron Anglin, the Wildlife Division Administrator for the department. And on his right, Mr. Bill Cook, Department of Justice, essentially does most all our work on wildlife statutory interpretation and legal policy. Want to start with some prepared remarks, which are being passed out right now by committee staff. I'd like to offer the following statement on Senate Bill 804, and then turn over to Mr. Anglin and Mr. Cook. While appearing simple, Senate Bill 804 addresses the complex issues surrounding the definition of wildlife. At issue is the definition of wildlife used in Oregon state statute when describing the wildlife species subject to the jurisdiction of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife Commission. And ORS 496.004, number 19, defines wildlife as fish, shellfish, wild birds, amphibians, and reptiles. Feral swine is defined by Department of Ag. At rule, another wild mammals. Historically, the Fish and Wildlife Commission interpreted this definition to provide broad authority to match both native and non-native wildlife, regardless of whether existing in the wild or held in captivity. This authority was used to regulate a range of wildlife species that could survive in the wild and posed risks to native wildlife. These concerns focused on preventing establishment of invasive species, crossbreeding, predation, disease, and competition. Over time, utilizing the Commission's authority, the Commission has adopted rules, and you see five examples there, regulating hunting of wildlife, such as canned hunts, specifying minimum caging requirements for bears and cougars, identified through an extensive public process, prohibited invasive species that represent biological risk to native species and their habitats here, regulated sport of falconry, and regulated the sale of wildlife and wildlife parts. However, in a very recent case heard by Oregon Supreme Court, the Commission's authority to regulate wildlife was reviewed and specifically changed. And specifically, the court ruled that the Commission can only regulate those birds and mammals that are wild, with wild defined as living in a free and untamed state. Consequently, the court's ruling has voided many aspects of the current rules mentioned above. As written, Senate Bill 804 authorizes the Commission to adopt rules defining, once again, wild birds and wild mammals in a manner that is consistent with the historical and previously applied definition of wildlife. Restoration of this authority is critical to ensuring long-term protection of Oregon's native wildlife species. I guess to sum up, Chair Roblin, Senate Bill 804, brought at our request by the Wildlife Society, who is here today, the Department and Commission are seeking to restore that broad historical definition of wildlife utilized by the Commission under current state law up until the very recent court case in the Oregon Supreme Court. Thank you for the opportunity to deliver these remarks, and I know Mr. Anglin and Mr. Cook have follow-up.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, for the record, Ron Anglin, Wildlife Division Administrator. Also in front of you as part of our testimony is Division 56 rules. that the commission has adopted in the past that outlines those species that the commission rules as either domestic and exempt, prohibited, controlled, or non-controlled. At the crux of the court's decision is these rules and how they pertain, or how the decision pertains to regulation of mammals and birds. Currently, within these rules, across all categories, there's over 13,000 species that the commission has ruled as either non-controlled or exempt, and about 2,200 that are classified as prohibited, and a little over 1,000 that are classified as controlled. There's been a long public process that we went through as an agency with an external review committee looking at the various species that people wanted to be able to own or possess. And that review committee made recommendations then to the department, and then the commission went through another public process that actually set these rules. Under the court ruling, these rules, as they pertain to birds and mammals, would need to be invalid, or are invalidated, and we would be taking action to remove these species from the list. Obviously, from the department standpoint, the species that are classified as prohibited are all species that have the very real potential of establishing themselves in the wild in Oregon, and we feel represent a substantial risk to native wildlife, and that is why they're listed as prohibited. The controlled species are ones that there are some risks. However, the commission, through a series of conditions, say that you can possess these species if you can meet these certain conditions. So we've got a long, lengthy process that we've used to establish these rules. And for people that would like to see the rules revised in any way, there is a process that they can petition the department and request a review of the rules and a review of the species. We would then pull together the review team of external people and have them look at that request and make recommendations to the department, which we would then take to the commission. Thank you, Chair Roland. Thank you very much. Yes.
Chair Roland, members of the committee, I'm Bill Cook from the Department of Justice. This bill would restore the authority that the commission had up until November of last year. For a number of years, we had understood that the commission had the authority to regulate wild birds and wild mammals regardless of whether they were running free or held in captivity. And we based this upon two formal attorney general opinions from 1979 and then from 1994. And those opinions focused on the modifier wild. The statute, as you noted, uses the word wild to modify both bird and mammal. Statutory interpretation question, the question was what was intended with that modifier. The AG's advice was to determine whether a bird or mammal was wild. You look at the species. You look at the species and you look at it globally. And if the species typically lives in the wild, the advice was it's wildlife and the commission can regulate it. 6 months ago, we had that issue before the Supreme Court. The court came down with a different approach. The new approach narrowed the definition of wildlife. The court said that instead of looking at species, you should instead look at individual birds and mammals. So the court said you look at an individual and you ask, is that individual living untamed in a state of nature? If the answer is yes, then the commission can regulate. The result, as these gentlemen indicated, was a narrowing of the commission's authority to only those birds and mammals that are tame or held in captivity. The bill in front of you would give the commission the authority to go through a public rulemaking process and to craft a definition of wild that picks up the essence of the Attorney General's advice, basically gets us back to where we had been authority-wise up until November. If you have any questions, I'd be glad to try to answer.
Any questions? Yes.
Mr. Chair, actually, I do have one. And it has to do with the definition that the Supreme Court came down with. And you stated it, I think, a little differently than how I'm reading it on Mr. Elliker's presentation. And Mr. Elliker's presentation says living in a free and untamed state, and you said, actually you said it a little differently, if you can restate.
Chair Roblin, Representative Maurer, I was quoting exactly from the court case. It is living untamed in a state of nature. As you might expect, sometimes we get into a shorthand version of trying to capture the essence. But the actual terminology from the court case was living untamed in a state of nature.
Follow up?
Yeah.
So does that now exclude any animal that's been tagged for, because that is not in a state of nature, any sort of conservation effort that would identify an animal?
Chair Roblin, Representative Maurer, I'm not sure I can answer that in the abstract. I apologize. It's a relatively new Supreme Court case. The essence of what they were trying to get at was the age-old definition of understanding of wild versus domesticated. And they came up with an individual-by-individual approach. With faced with the situation you have described, I'd need to get out the opinion and go through it again in detail and apply that. I would be skeptical, but I'd like to reserve my final answer if I could.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, just one other thing. On the list that we've passed out, Division 56, I did want to bring the committee's attention to page 7. Page 7 is the list of domestic or otherwise exempt animals, and that is the list of animals in the commission process. And there's, as you notice, everything from alpaca down to, I don't know if I pronounce it, vincana, I guess, and turkeys and swine. In other words, these are essentially the animals that the commission has decided will not be under commission jurisdiction. These are domestic or otherwise exempt animals. You can see that they're primarily, I guess, commonly would be referred to as livestock and other species. And those are animals for which, essentially, in the commission and department's purview, these are essentially under the Department of Ag. The Fish and Wildlife Commission does not take jurisdiction over the list of animals on page 7.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any further questions? I guess what I would ask is that we have a floor session in about 3 minutes, and so we may ask you to come back because we're not going to be able to finish this here.
With pleasure. Thank you.
Okay,
thank
and have some questions. We do have two people who have traveled over 150 miles, and so I would like to get both of their testimony in case they have to come back. If we can do it fairly quickly, it would be helpful. One is Clark Couch, and the other is with Stephen Kafori. I think it's Warren. Is it Steve? Amy? So what you go first, and if you can keep it fairly short, because we have, but I don't want to have to trade back and forth if we can help it.
Okay. Chair, Representative Roblin, and committee members.
Make sure you identify yourself for the record.
I'm sorry. Clark Couch of Ashwood, Oregon. The case that was cited previously is the case that I was involved in. And I do have a copy of the Supreme Court actual testimony there, or ruling from the Supreme Court, and also of the Circuit Court. I didn't get a copy of the Oregon Court of Appeals. Basically, what is this, the reason this bill is here is the Fish and Wildlife decided that they were going to redefine animals. Some of those animals were historically domestic and always had been. And when they did redefine those, they turned them into wildlife. And as we know under ORS 498, wildlife is the property of the state. The Oregon Federal District Court ruled that no private individual could own wildlife in the state of Oregon. And otherwise, wildlife's protected under 498. You can't buy, sell, trade. You can't hunt, angle, fish for wildlife in the state of Oregon. So the animals they were talking about were domestic livestock that were either defined under ORS 607, which I have included a copy for you, and also the USDA. And that was under CFR 9. And they also defined livestock under the USDA. So many of these animals they're talking about are previously and historically have been defined as livestock, not wildlife. And a good example of that is, it's no secret to the fish and wildlife to want to redefine bison. And so once they redefine bison as a wild animal, it becomes wildlife property of the state. On the other hand, you've got 607 saying they are domestic livestock. So in a court of law, where does that leave you? You've got livestock on one hand, fish and wildlife saying no, they're wildlife. So you end up in court, and it's where we were. And that's how the Supreme Court defined what wild mammals were. And so to allow the Department of Fish and Wildlife to redefine wild animals or wild mammals is going to end up back in court, because historically there's always been Department Ag and Department of Fish and Wildlife. That's a balancing act. So it's like the last session, they wanted to define feral swine as wildlife. But the Department of Ag was able to come to the legislature as Fish and Wildlife. The legislature defined what wild swine was, or feral swine. Not the Fish and Wildlife, not Department Ag. They both had their own input, as well as the public. And to take that away from the public, I think is wrong. To give sole authority to one agency to redefine what wild mammals are. And I also included in your packet the 22nd Judicial District Court's, the Circuit Court ruling in this case earlier. And in here they said, if the Department of Fish and Wildlife does convert these animals to wildlife or wild mammals, it will be a takings. And the judge put that in there, realizing that these animals will convert to state property. Thank you, Chair.
Any questions? Yeah, any questions?
Just that last portion that's in this packet, if I keep reading.
Yes, the on the last page here, page 5 of the Circuit Court judge ruling, it talks about the takings there.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And
I kept it short.
You did a great job.
Thank you.
Actually, a very good job, so thank you. Stephen Kafuri and Warren. And Amy.
Starting to convene on the floor.
Okay, we're going to have to get there fairly. So they're convening on the floor at 4, but we'll let you go before you so you don't have to hurry back. Are you planning on being here next week?
Which day next week?
Probably it would be Tuesday. Or Thursday. No. Okay, go ahead now then so I can get your testimony in.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Stephen Kafuri, representing the Wildlife Society of Oregon Chapter. You've heard all our testimony. We were asked to introduce this bill, and after taking a look at it, our Society of Biologists supported it and introduced the bill. Two couple things I want to mention. One is that we added an emergency clause to the bill. Secondly, that bison are presently defined by statute, or excuse me, they're defined as livestock, and this bill would not change that. We support the bill, and I would like to have Warren Aney, who's chairman of the legislative committee, talk about what happens if the bill does not pass.
Okay, Chairman Roblin, members of the committee, my name is Warren Aney, and I'm here as a volunteer on behalf of my professional society, the Oregon Chapter of the Wildlife Society. As a professionally certified wildlife ecologist, I've had considerable experience with a wide variety of wildlife species, including some non-native species. There was mention of the Wildlife Integrity Program. This is an effective program. This is the one that defines what is controlled, what is prohibited, on the basis that you've already heard. I'm not going to go into that. But other than to point out the fact that the court decision did nullify the portion of that act as it applies to wild mammals, except for deer, and wild birds. And so, therefore, there are some problems, and these have already been mentioned, problems with disease transmission. For example, there's been mention of feral swine. I'd like to distinguish between feral swine and wild boar. The feral swine is livestock, and it is under the Department of Agriculture. Under the Wildlife Integrity Rules, The wild boar is included under the wildlife integrity rules as a prohibited species, and the reason is because it is a real problem with carrying such diseases as swine brucellosis, pseudorabies virus, and trichinosis. I don't want to go into, there's a number of other things that are in the written thing, material that we've handed out. There are problems with inadvertent introduction of potentially invasive species. We've seen it with the nutria. We could see it with some other species like hedgehog or other species of possum, civets, some other species that are currently prohibited for that reason. There's other points I'd like to, but I realize you're on a time limit, so the emergency clause, I think, is important because it's needed so that the intent and the effect of the wildlife integrity program is quickly restored and we don't have some animals slipping in under this time gap. Somebody could legally right now bring in an animal that's on the prohibited list, and we want that possibility eliminated as soon as possible.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
I just would like to note that as a professional society, they normally do not advocate or take positions, and yet I've seen them here three times. So it must be we're getting into your realm here, apparently, repeatedly.
Normally we want to provide scientific information that helps in your decision-making process. This is one issue where we have purposely taken an advocacy role because it fits in with our chapter policy and our national society's policy.
Thank you very much. So we will...
Thursday.
Yeah. So we'll carry this over to Thursday, and those people who are on the list, we will keep them on the list so that they can come back, and we'll have another hearing. So we're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill. Which one is it? 804. And with that, and knowing we're 5 minutes late for the floor session, we're going to close the Committee on Ag and Natural Resources. Thank you very much.